Good afternoon. I'm Warren Giroux of Slightline Wealth Management. I'm here today with our continuing series of manager interviews. Today, we have Maria Smirnova, manager of the Nine Point Precious Minerals Fund and the Nine Point Silver Equities class. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you, Warren.
It's been a while since I last spoke, and a lot has been going on in the precious mineral space. Can you tell our listeners what has been the key driver of this latest move in gold and equities, or gold and silver equities?
Yes, certainly. Thanks, Warren, and thanks everyone for joining us today. As Warren mentioned, I am a co-portfolio manager of the Gold and Precious Minerals Fund, and I'm the sole manager of the Nine Point Silver Equities class. And I will answer that very question that Warren posed in a series of slides that's just ahead of us. In the meantime, though, I wanted to tell you a little bit about myself. I have been at Sprott Asset Management, and Sprott Asset Management, by the way, is the sub-advisor for Nine Point Partners. I have been at Sprott for about 15 years now, actually. I started with Eric Sprott in 05. And Eric hired me as an analyst to cover the base metals sector, actually. And it was only after a couple of years of being at Sprott that I really took on the precious metals as well and never looked back. And so it's been a really interesting experience for me. You know, everything I know about the sector, about mining, about fund management, you know, equities, all of that I learned on the job at Sprott. I had a chance to learn from fantastic people, you know, starting with Eric himself. But there were other very, very fantastic managers like John Embry and Charles Oliver. And I learned from all of those gentlemen over the years. So I'm very proud to be where I am. I'm very happy to have these two funds under my purview. And I'm very excited about the precious metals right now. And what we're seeing right now is just, you know, it's the first few innings of the game here, and I will walk you through why we think that and why we're excited. So turning to slide one, we provide a little bit of an economic macro backdrop, and this says U.S. federal budget deficit. Now, why the United States? Well, the United States obviously is a very important economy in the world, but it's also very indicative of other countries and, you know, other things that are going on in the world. It's, you know, it doesn't work in isolation. But all I'm trying to illustrate with this slide is what is happening to, you know, the financing of the United States. And again, this is happening in other countries too. It's not just the U.S. But basically, the government finances are becoming more and more strained as time goes on. Social entitlements are going up, you know, pension funding is deficient. We need more money going towards social care. We need more money going towards Medicare, medical care. And, you know, if you see this year, of course, what's happened is the COVID pandemic crisis has completely catapulted the finances out of the water. And that's why the blue line is just plummeted in recent months. June alone, I believe the budget deficit was, to be exact, about $864 million. The deficit is now at $3 trillion on a rolling 12-month basis. So what this means, basically, is that governments are economies have shut down, and governments have had to step in and finance spending, okay? At the same time, the Federal Reserve in the United States and against other central banks around the world have had to help out by cutting interest rates. And low or negative real interest rates are very positive for both gold and silver. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later. But basically, I just wanted to show here that, you know, what we're seeing around the world is increasing debt levels. And that, again, stems from the fact that governments need to take more debt on because they have higher spending. And interest rates are going lower and lower and lower. So turning to slide two, then, I call it whatever it takes. And basically, that has become the mantra starting in about March And March is when the global pandemic really took over the Western world. You know, people realized it's coming, it's here. It's not going to be contained to one or two regions of the world. And like I said earlier, the central banks and governments around the world have had to step in and provide stimulus for their economies. This chart is to me, but I'm sure the numbers haven't gotten any better in the last 2 months. You can see that in the United States, stimulus reached 44% of GDP. In Europe, it reached 36% of GDP. And the list goes on. Globally, the number was tallied at 25% of world GDP, you know, was stimulated by the government. So these are unprecedented numbers, truly. We haven't seen this type of QE and monetary easing, I don't even know if ever, really. And again, this environment is what's very positive for gold and silver, and that is why gold and silver, and particularly gold, started the rally, have been ripping of late. On slide three, I reiterate that point just by showing that negative real interest rates, and that's the gray bars up and down. So when you see periods of gray bars being down, those are periods of negative interest rates. And in those periods, gold has tended to do really, really well. It happened in the 80s. It happened, obviously, after the global financial crisis after 08, when, you know, people started QE, quantitative easing, et cetera, et cetera. And it's happening again now. Real interest rates, these are interest rates adjusted for inflation, have been negative or turning negative everywhere. And again, it's been very good for gold and silver. Turning to slide four then, another factor that has been driving gold particularly is central bank gold purchases, okay? You can see that about 10 years ago, central banks went from being net sellers of gold to net buyers of gold. And, you know, we talk about China, Russia, India, but there are other smaller central banks, particularly emerging market central banks, that have been buying gold as well in various quantities. Again, this is a realization that you can't have all your foreign reserves in the United States dollars. This is a realization that gold is a currency and is a store of value, and that is why central banks have been doing this. So again, we are expecting this trend to continue for the foreseeable future. On slide five, simply a chart of gold with some technical levels. You know, I asked our strategist, Paul Wong, to help me out with this slide. What I often say is, you know, while we've had really a big rally in the last couple of years, gold quietly started rallying at the end of 2015. And you can see the dash gray black line type thing that shows you the uptrend line. And gold has been volatile. Yes, it reached $1,900 back in 2011 and then sold off and then quietly started rallying again. And when we broke through 1500, last year, that really what opened up a lot of technical levels and helped gold start rallying. So, and that's what exactly we're seeing now. You know, next target is 2000, but I'm seeing all kinds of targets. I'm seeing people project 3000. You know, there's all kinds of numbers that are being flown around. But the truth is, we don't know what's going to happen. And the truth is, we haven't been in this environment before. Like I said, this is very unprecedented. So really anything could happen. And this has all been also supported by investor demand, of course. On slide six, one aspect of investor demand are exchange traded funds or ETFs. And starting again in, started last year, but beginning of this year, we're really seeing a big acceleration in sales of both silver and gold ETF holdings. And in fact, for silver specifically, I will point out that from mid-March till about end of July to now, we've seen about 270 million ounces go into ETFs. And if you annualize that, that equates to pretty much the whole of mine supply in silver. You know, mine supply in silver is between 800 and 900 million ounces. So the numbers that we're seeing in demand is kind of crazy. And also, I will say that we've seen since March a pickup, a real spike in coin sales, and particularly again in silver coin sales. Premiums have gone up per ounce, and also a lot of these coins simply have sold out as demand has picked up. So turning more a bit to silver then, on slide 7, we like to talk about the gold to silver ratio for what it's worth. Silver has silver outperforms gold in bull markets and underperforms gold in bear markets. It underperformed exactly until about mid-March, and a lot of people wrote silver off for dead. But after that, silver has picked up and started performing gold. And we kind of knew that would happen. Well, we didn't know, but we predicted that would happen because a similar thing happened in the global financial crisis of 2008. At the end of that year, silver didn't do really well. It really sold off, but then began rallying and outperformed gold for the next few years, peaking at close to $50 an ounce. And we are seeing exactly the same thing today. And I think it's happening because silver is half industrial use and half monetary use, like gold. So sometimes it has these two heads and it can't decide which metal it is. So it sold off in March because, again, economies were shutting down around the world, and people expected the industrial uses to really drop off the face of the earth. And since then, as the global economy is returning to life, again, we're expecting industrial demand to pick up. But at the same time, investment demand is picking up, as I've already mentioned. So those two things are driving silver to new highs. Of course, it's not even close to the last high, but I think it has a lot of room to go still. So let's turn to equities then, because that's, at the end of the day, that is what we do. We manage equity products, and we are believers in, you know, we look for good businesses, and we look for companies that will make money. But what's happened in the last few years, in the last couple of decades, in fact, is that the equities have really underperformed bullion. And you can see that from the 80s to 90s to 2000s, there's a ratio of gold gold equities to spot gold. And the red ratio was about 0.25. But recently, it's really dropped off, which tells you gold equities have really underperformed the bullion. And right now we're sitting at around 0.08. So again, there has to be a re-rate that happens over time. As gold and silver continue to rally, the equities have to catch up with the bullion. And that will happen because companies will start reporting strong earnings, strong cash flows. We're already starting to see that. You know, we have reporting season on us right now, and we're watching the earnings come in. And we're already seeing companies deliver strong results and good free cash flow, and that's what we watch for. How much bottom line cash the companies add to their balance sheet. Slide 9 is a similar chart, just illustrating the fact that in prior years we thought that the gold companies didn't do themselves any justice. Their operations were weak, they overspent, they overspent on acquisitions, they their operations weren't efficient. In the last few years, we've really watched these companies try to fix themselves. They've had to become leaner and meaner. They've had to try to reduce costs because the gold price wasn't supportive of overspending. And now, as a result, we're seeing a stronger universe of companies with good balance sheets, delevered financially, but still trading at a discount. And on slide 10, again, it's a similar thing where I'm showing forward-looking price to cash flows, both in the gold space and a subset of the silver space. While we're not at lows, certainly, and particularly the silvers have rallied, we're certainly also not at highs. And you can see back in 2008, 2009, 2010, multiples were quite higher, quite a bit higher than they are now. So we do feel also that, you know, we have room for these stocks to grow. And also, I will point out that the analytical community is very slow to catch up in terms of projections for the gold and silver prices. It's rarely that people use spot prices for their projections, which means in reality, cash flows will be higher, and that means that these price to cash flow levels are actually lower than the graph indicates. And again, if we're expecting strength in the metals, we would say that, you know, there's room for the equities to grow as well. On slide 11, just quickly, I reiterate my point that we are seeing an expansion of margins. This is very positive for the space. As you can see, this you know, in the few years back, there was an average of about $300-something an ounce. Well, margins are doubling this year because, A, the price is going up so rapidly. And think about it, for every dollar increase in price, that pretty much translates to the bottom line, you know, minus taxes, minus royalties. But generally, if you have an increase in gold or silver price, that will translate to your bottom line because most costs are fixed. So it's very positive for the space. And like I said, that's part of the reason why we're so excited. At the same time, and on slide 12, I show the shares outstanding for GDX, which is like the senior gold index, GDXJ, which is an ETF tracking the junior miners, and then GLD, which is the physical gold. And while we see that the shares outstanding in GLD have gone up and up and up, which tells you people are buying bullion, the shares outstanding in both GDX and GDXJ have really floundered. That means no money is really yet going into the equity space. And that presents an opportunity in itself. This space is not very big, okay? Both of the, and the silver space is even smaller. So it doesn't take very much for inflows to move the prices. And so when that interest starts translating to the equities, which will happen, it just takes time, we would expect valuations to change once again, and prices will move higher. We're also focused, and on slide 13, I'm illustrating valuations in more of the junior miners versus the senior miners. Our focus has traditionally been on small to mid capitalization companies. And the smaller companies have done even worse than the seniors, and you can see that in evaluation here. There's been a big gap that's developed in the two subgroups. It is starting to change. You know, we are seeing small companies do better and better, which has been very positive. But our strength is in finding those exploration stories and those small to mid-cap producers that will be growing their production and may become of interest to the larger producers as well. Slide 14, just quickly again, that in the last bull run, which was in the 2000s, equities outperformed the bullion by 3-to-1 roughly. Okay, and that does happen because miners have leverage to the prices of bullion. As I said, for every dollar increase, most of that, you know, so let's say the price of gold goes from $1 to $2. Well, that incremental dollar is all profit. So that's a doubling of profit. That's a very crude example, but that's kind of the idea. So again, we are hoping that the trends that we have seen in the past reverse, and gold equities outperform bullion. So on slide 15 is the Sprott Gold team. And I wanted to stop and pause here because, as I said, I'm very proud of where I am and the team around us, okay? The Gold and Precious Minerals Fund is co-managed by myself, Jason Mayer, and Sri Kargutkar. But we're also working with industry heavyweights and, you know, seasoned portfolio managers, John Hathaway and Doug Groh. These two gentlemen came to us from Tocqueville Gold. We acquired their assets as well, and they are managing funds in the United States right now. But we have a daily call with them. We talk to them a lot. We exchange ideas. And I feel like our team is quite strong because, we cover a lot of ground. Also, we have some technical advisors. And, for example, Justin Tolman, he resides in the U.S., but he's on the phone with us every day. We often ask him to look at earlier stage projects from a geologic perspective. He really provides some fabulous advice to us. And so, again, I think that's one of the things we, that differentiates Sprott Asset Management from other portfolio managers or portfolio management firms, I should say, as Sprott has really put a lot of effort into growing the precious metals equity team in a time when it was really tough to do that. Because, in fact, what we were seeing in the last few years is funds shutting down everywhere around the globe and the sector shrinking. So I think now we have that edge going forward in a more positive environment. So let's turn to the funds then. We'll start with a 9-point gold and precious minerals fund on slide 16. We show you here recent performance and also the top 10 holdings. As I mentioned, our bread and butter is smaller capitalization companies. That's not to say we don't own larger companies. So, for example, Gold Fields and Northern Star and Kinross are good examples of larger gold producers, but those ones that we feel have good growth prospects, have been adding ounces to their books, have been growing their companies, and also very leveraged to the prices of gold and silver. And they have done really, really well lately, and Gold Fields frankly grew to the number one spot naturally. And then we have a lot of kind of mid-tier producers, smaller companies. Again, we're global. We invest in companies that mine in Africa, mine in Australia, Canada, et cetera, et cetera. So we have, in fact, placed emphasis on companies that are operating in Australia, Northern Star, and Saracen and Ramelius are good examples of that. And these companies have done really well for us. What you're not seeing here in the top 10 are some of the great exploration ideas that we haven't put in the portfolio, and particularly recently. And that's going to be the future. That's going to be the future of the industry and the future of the holdings as well. And, of course, our performance is starting to reflect the efforts we have made. And, like I said, smaller companies are starting to outperform the larger companies. Our index is very skewed to the large caps, Barrick and Newmont, and we don't own either of those companies. But the performance is starting to reflect the prospects of the smaller guys. So that's the Gold and Precious Minerals Fund, and I think we're well positioned for this bull run. The 9-point silver equities class on slide 17, that fund I've managed since inception. It was launched, frankly, probably the worst time in the beginning of 2012. And you can see that from the performance chart. What I've tried to do is add alpha over the long term in the fund. And my recent focus, again, has been on finding new ideas, and particularly exploration ideas, to add kind of spice to the portfolio. And I always say exploration is the future of the industry, and that is my focus. I look for management teams that can find silver deposits, that can find future mines. What we have not had in this industry a lot of is new discoveries or a lot of money going to exploration recently. So that's kind of the focus. And again, performance is definitely reflecting that. Small companies are starting to outperform. A great source of cash for me has been Wheaton Precious Metals. This position used to be about 23% at its height, and you can see it's 11.5% here now. So what I've done is taken kind of money off the table there and redeployed it into smaller ideas. So I'm very excited about what's happening in the silver space right now. So that's that. I will close with the slide 18, fund codes. I also wanted to point out that sub-advised 2 bullion funds. We have 2 bullion options, the gold bullion and the silver bullion. And all these products are available through Sightline Wealth and through 9-point partners. And that's about it for me, Warren. So if you want to shoot some questions at me.
Yeah, I have a few questions from our listeners. What is the annual production in ounces, both in silver and gold, and what is the demand, current demand?
Well, for silver, the annual product market is about 1 billion ounces. And as I mentioned, mining supply represents about 870 million ounces of that, and the rest comes from scrap. The demand side is a bit trickier to estimate. However, the numbers that we track from GFMS Refinitiv tell us that silver has been in physical supply deficit for the last few years. Now, the deficit hasn't been large. It's varied about between 30 and 100 million ounces a year, and that has been met by inventories. But as I mentioned earlier, what we're seeing is huge pickup in demand. And we obviously don't know the number for this year yet, but like I said, if ETF flows continue just from ETFs, we could have 800 million ounces taken up just from that aspect. Add to that coins. Coins are usually about 150 to 200 million ounces a year. That could go higher as well. So I would foresee that we would definitely be in, now that will be offset potentially by a drop in industrial demand, but we'll see how much. So I think overall, I'd expect the market to be in a substantial deficit at the end of this year. And in terms of gold, supply per year is about 4,500 tons. I'd have to translate into ounces. I usually...
Tons are fine.
Tons are fine. Okay. And a similar idea, you know, jewelry demand has been quite stable in gold. You know, if anything, I'd expect that to start increasing. And investment demand, so you could consider actually jewelry demand as investment demand, I would definitely expect to increase. So I don't have a number for you on that side, but definitely the trend would be positive in my mind.
Would you say most of the demand on the gold side is coming from the ETF market and investors or central banks at this point? Because as you noted in one of your slides earlier, there's been a significant demand for gold over the last several years from central banks.
Yeah, well, I mean, the central bank demand has been between 600 and 800 tons. So that's a big component, but that's not more than 50%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The rest would be investment demand. I think investment demand is, at the end of the day, is what drives the price. And so it overwhelms supply, okay? So I would say that's bigger, particularly in silver. Obviously, in silver, there is no central bank buying of silver ounces. In fact, they used to be sellers as well. That dried up, but central banks aren't, that we know of, buying silver. So investment demand is really the key there.
So when you look around the landscape, have there been any major discoveries recently? And because I haven't heard of any significant discoveries of gold or silver. So what has been going on in that area? I mean, you said there's some exploration going on, but I imagine given the current state of affairs, it's been rather limited or certainly much reduced than it has been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And we used to have a slide on this, in fact, in the last few years, I think 3 years, there has not been significant, and I think significant is counted as 2 million ounces or more, but there's not significant, no new significant discoveries of gold. And I would say that's the same statement can be made for silver. Silver mm-hmm. has even been more dismal in terms of discoveries. We even have very few development projects that are going into production. It's only now, as I said, and only now the money is returning to silver exploration. But what I am seeing is, it's not brand new discoveries necessarily, okay? It's an old mine, okay? And somebody comes in and starts drilling around the old mine and either taking an old resource and redefining it and growing it, or, again, around an old mine and trying to find more mineralization somewhere where it's already been mined. So I would say it's more like brownfields exploration. But yeah, we are seeing some money going into that, and that's where I see we can, you know, particularly the funds, can create a lot of value.
So when you look at the current macroeconomic environment, with especially when we look at the explosion in debt, and I, you know, I was kind of curious as to what your view would be. I mean, prior to COVID, we had an enormous amount of debt, and we were kind of questioning how governments were ever going to pay back this debt. Now it's exploded to the upside, and all of a sudden we're seeing this move in the precious metals. Do you think it's a lack of confidence in the government's ability to actually pay back the debt that is interesting, and as a result, the weakness, possible weakness in currency, especially the U.S. dollar, has prompted this strong move into metals, or is that still yet to come?
Well, it's both. It's all of the above. You know, the dollar weakness has been interesting because, of course, the dollar has been strong for so long. But in fact, it's not in the U.S.'s interest to have a strong dollar, right? If you think about trade, mm-hmm. if you think about, like you said, financing your debt levels, it's a currency war that's been going on for years, and it's a race to the bottom in fiat currencies. And yeah, that drives gold up.
Yes, I imagine it would. And sort of the longevity of this, because we've never been in a cycle like this before where we've seen certainly a lack of confidence in government, and that seems to be escalating or growing as days go on here. Does this sort of portend in your way of thinking that this could be a much more extended cycle for gold and precious metals, given the fact that, you know, returning to normal is somewhere down the road? It's not a normal business cycle where you could say in a couple of years we'll be back to normal. It's gone beyond that. So your outlook on a longer term, or do you even go there? Do you even consider that this could be a much greater extended cycle than it has in the past?
Well, I certainly hope so. And, you know, I think there has been a realization from market participants that, you know, you can't raise rates, right? As an example, the reason gold sold off in the last couple of years when the Fed started raising rates, because everyone thought, oh, look, the economy is doing great, the Fed's raising rates. Well, that was exactly the wrong thing to do, right? And now they've had to backtrack. And yeah, so I think now people are realizing this, A, COVID is not going away as soon as we had hoped, unfortunately, and it's been tragic. But that's also bringing to the fore all the debt and all the deficits and all the spending that needs to be done. And I'll read you, you know, I was reading because the Fed had their meeting yesterday. And so now we're getting snippets of what Mr. Powell said. So Mr. Powell suggested spending and taxation decisions by Congress and the White House are more urgent now that the Fed has pinned short-term rates near zero while long-term rates hovering at all-time lows. So now the focus is shifting. Okay, we've done all we can in the monetary sense. We've introduced QE. We're buying treasuries. We've lowered rates as much as we can. Well, now it's up to the government to have fiscal stimulus in spending, et cetera, and tax, right? What happens to how do we finance this? How do we stimulate our economy, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be resolved overnight, that's for sure.
Yeah. If I can, I'd like to turn to slide 8 in your presentation. Here you have the gold equities undervalued relative to bullion from a period of time of 1990 to 2020. And there you say the gold ratio to relative to bullion is 0.08, and the average 25-year average ending around 2007 was 0.24, say 25.25. So that would lead me to believe, or one to suspect, if you were looking at this chart, to think that we could see the value of gold equities in general almost tripling to get back to the average. Is that a fair assessment, or would you say it's less, more? And that's just sort of the average of that 25-year period.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assessment. That's exactly why we try to illustrate. There's just been no money going into these equities. Generalists have had zero interest in buying gold equities, you know, so if that changes and we're seeing signs of it changing, people are starting to pay attention, that's what we're hoping will change the valuation for sure.
I guess I can't think of any questions for myself, and I think I've pretty well exhausted some of the questions we've had. And you answered certainly a lot of the questions that our listeners had submitted in advance of this. So I think that's probably covers all the ground. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with regarding gold and precious metals and silver?
Well, just like as I said, we are quite, you know, it's really unfortunate what's happened in the world. I call COVID pandemic the catalyst that really the crisis, the catalyst that started, you know, people paying attention to gold and silver. But in reality, the trends that we talk about, fiscal deficits, growing levels of debt, these trends have been in the background for years. I just don't think people really paid attention to them. Those people who really analyze and study the market, they had that realization and were a bit early to the game. But now, now that we've had this first kind of initial pop, initial wave, I think the way is open. Okay, there's more focus on gold and silver right now. People are paying better attention, but it's not too late, because like I said, these things don't resolve overnight, will not resolve overnight. I don't believe in a big V-shaped recovery. And the problems that we have in the world cannot be addressed just so easily, right? We don't have the solutions right now. So we're in an environment for at least a couple of years where it's positive for gold and silver. And I think for our funds, the two funds that I spoke about, we're well-positioned with our holdings. We're very happy how we have the funds positioned. We always have our eyes peeled for new stories and discoveries. I keep stressing that word, discoveries and exploration. And so I think happy overall. And if there's any more questions anytime, I'm here to answer them.
Okay, Maria. Well, thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon. I would encourage any of our listeners, if you have any questions on this presentation or any thoughts you'd like to discuss, please reach out to your Sightline Wealth Management Advisor, and I'm sure they'll be able to help you or put you in touch with Maria. Thank you very much.